Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Our time is now with LSU basketball.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
One way or another, we're going to make history.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
I came here to win. We're going to win immediately.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the Executive Editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the Editor, Glenn Gilbo. A packed show for you here tonight. Coming up a little bit later, LSU softball coach Beth Torino will join us to talk about their super regional matchup against Alabama. Matt Hayes from the USA Today will join us. Big week next week, SEC spring meetings in Destin. Matt will help preview that and talk about the discussion over a 24-team college football playoff. Lon Phillips Sullivan of LSU Odyssey also will join us to talk LSU football and other things. And then our good old friend Andre Champagne from 247 Sports will join us to talk football recruiting. And recruiting is where we'll start the show off tonight. Guys, how you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
We're doing well. Doing well. We'll get into some baseball talk as well, as it's possible the season comes to an end tonight or tomorrow. Or
you sound hopeful that it comes to an end, Jeff.
It needs to come to an end.
So we can recruit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It certainly would help. Let's start off on our big topic tonight. Will Wade is in the news, and he's apparently aggravating every coach in college basketball because that's...
That's what he likes to do.
Yeah, that's what
he likes to do. He's like Tony Vitello. He's a Tony Vitello of college basketball.
It's like if there's a rule... Then he wants to stretch that rule.
Take the gray Test area. It. Yeah. And it's funny, LSU fans love him, but Tony Vitello's the same guy, and they all hated him. It's who you're coaching for.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But what we're talking about, in case you're not aware, LSU has apparently signed the Big East Player of the Year, and that sounds like fantastic news. But R.J. Louise, who was an outstanding player for St. John's, an All-American there, where he averaged 18 points and 7 rebounds and 30 as a starter in 32 of 35 games for St. John's 2 seasons ago for Coach Rick Pitino. The problem is that he was signed by the Utah Jazz, traded to the Boston Celtics, was then sent to the Celtics G League team in Maine, but he never played in a professional game. But yet he was signed by a professional or an NBA team because he went undrafted in the 2025 NBA draft. And
He's been paid.
And
of course, that's not a big deal anymore.
College coaches.
Peanuts compared to what he'll probably be making.
Just a minor rule, according to Will Wade. Will Wade doesn't really pay attention to rules. He'll get around it. That's just a little distraction.
But this... All right, give me your guys' take.
I think they may not get him. They have a chance to get him, and Will Wade feels like he's worth taking a chance on, and I think he is too. He's a very talented player. He'd be one of the best players in the SEC. They're going to try to get him. They might. One of the things that they're going to push with a judge or with whoever they talk to try to get a ruling is the fact that he has not played, whereas the Alabama player who lost his eligibility, he did play. Now, that might not mean anything because whether he played or not, he did sign with the NBA team. But that's just one wrinkle that they're trying, and they think they have a chance. But they're not, like, thinking that they automatically got him. But they think they have a chance.
I think that they have a good chance because it'll probably be in Louisiana over there in the 19th district. judicial court, and they'll probably, you know, they'll probably get it just like Chambliss got it in Oxford or wherever outside of Oxford.
Well, I mean, LSU's got a great law school, and Baton Rouge is crawling with lawyers and judges who graduated from LSU. I'll never forget, a friend of mine told me that there's more LSU law school graduates in Baton Rouge than there are hookers in Vegas.
No, realistically, that, you know, you talk about the fact that we're joking, but we're also serious. When's the last time the NCAA won a case like this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know? Well,
why is the NCAA still around?
Well, Alabama did lose its player
eventually,
right? But I mean, he only played a couple of weeks, so I guess you could say the NCAA won that one.
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is the rule is that if you sign. It's not if you play.
Yeah, right.
Now, that kid from Alabama played 82 games or something like that.
Yeah, right. That's a little different, but it might not mean anything.
Right. Well, apparently nothing means anything
that's true
anymore. But
it's worth a try. I mean, if it's the Wild West, you might as well take a try, and that's what it is. So Wade is being smart for trying to get the kid, you know, because nowadays – you know, if you try to follow the rules, you know, you lose, you know. So why follow? What, there's a gentleman's agreement among the other coaches not to go after this kid, and that's why they're mad at Wade?
Yeah, and everybody else on his roster is from Israel or from somewhere in Europe that's on the roster right now, and they've all played pro ball, but it doesn't matter. You can play pro ball over there and come play
different
college
rules.
Ball here.
Right.
Although there may be some challenges to a couple of those, from what I understand, but you can't touch the NBA players.
Well, I think with Wade, and maybe he's already done this, the first thing you do is recruit a judge. Then you recruit the player.
Does he have any attorneys on his staff? I mean,
that would be a good idea. I'm sure there's plenty of attorneys with LSU degrees in Baton Rouge who are willing to help Will Wade. He's a rock star in Baton Rouge.
So Jeff Goodman's been on a tirade today against Will Wade. He is the co-founder of the Field of 68. He got a quote from what he called a top 20 head coach, which was later identified, according to John Rothstein, as Tom Izzo, of course, the legendary coach at Michigan State. And the quote that Jeff Goodman uses, again, Goodman doesn't say who the coach is. He says, I have to take some words out of there because there's some profanity in this. You're being an idiot for the sake of being an idiot. What you're doing is screwing it up for everyone else. And John Rothstein also then added to those comments, and John Rothstein's kind of in the, but him and Will Wade are good friends. So John's getting this stuff.
He broke the story about Wade.
Yes.
Coming to LSU.
And then, Rothstein also said that Izzo remarked, Wade is one of the most useless basketball minds in the sport.
Wow. We don't know if Izzo said that, but that's what he's saying Izzo said.
That's what, according to Rothstein.
Wow.
Izzo said Wade is one of the most useless basketball minds.
Why is he upset with him?
Okay. They've been upset with him ever since his days at VCU's. They've never liked this guy.
I know, but I want to know why they're lashing out at him right now specifically.
Because he's trying to stretch the rules. Right. And that this...
Because everybody on his roster is 24, 25 years old right now?
No, I think Izzo is particularly mad about the Luis. Just that's what he's really mad about, right, Jeff?
Yeah, this was in response.
I don't think he has an issue with the other guys.
You're seeing the 24-year-old Brazilian power forward, and then you're hearing about the reports of this other guy from Israel who...
Well, that's not new, though. You got 23- and 24-year-old guys from overseas playing at other colleges.
Let's talk about the Israel kid, Yam Madar, the 25-year-old Israeli point guard. Mm-hmm. I've seen reports in the last 24 hours from reputable sources saying he's signed, and it's $5 million. And I can't locate anyone at LSU who knows anything about it.
Can I add something here? Because Jeff Goodman just tweeted this out about 10 minutes ago. I don't mean to just completely ignore what you just said, Todd.
Sounds like it, but go ahead.
Goodman is reporting that Will Wade has landed a 6'6" wing player. I believe his name is Seliu Nyang.
We were expecting that one. Right?
22 years old, drafted by the Cavs in 2025.
Oh, yeah, we've already written about him. Right. Yeah.
He's the kid from Italy.
Right. He was he's being supposedly recruited and try and close to signing. So, but he's reporting that he's signed.
That is according to Jeff Goodman.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's another good player.
I'd also like to point out that I don't believe LSU has officially announced any of these signings.
But how much of their you have to make sure that's. It sounds like you have to figure out if more than half of these guys are even eligible to play.
Well, and if they're on Social Security yet.
Here's another tweet from Jeff Goodman. Will Wade is bad for college basketball right now.
And I don't understand. I'm not saying I disagree. I want them to quit throwing out these comments and talk about why they say that. And I know we can sit there and assume and project and be pretty much dead on with what we think. But I would love for them to clarify what they're talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons potentially why Will Wade's bad for college basketball. Todd's just looking for some specificity.
But it is amazing how much he gets. I mean, it's – and, you know, Illinois could go do this. A lot of other schools can go do this, and it's
– Will's only got five players, man. He's not being picky about the rules or about what Tom Izzo thinks the rule is.
Well, this is – here's what I don't – I don't understand how we've gotten to this point. I really don't.
Because it's pro basketball and pro football being played under the – infrastructure of public universities. That's what it's really all about.
The NCAA is governing, or it's been established, and I don't think the rules have changed, to be a amateur sport, right? It's governing an amateur sport. And when you sign with a professional team, and I understand the definition of amateur has changed because of NIL and now revenue sharing and all that. But when you sign with a professional team, to me, whether it's in the United States, if it's in Italy, Antarctica, Korea.
I agree. You shouldn't
that's
be able
it.
To play.
You're done. To me, they fell out
foreign players that were professional players to play college ball for a long time. I don't know exactly when it started, but it's been several
years.
And
how did it happen?
I don't know. But it's a classic case of when you start bending the rule a little bit, it's going to try to eat more ground up elsewhere, and that's exactly what's going on. And the fact of the matter is that ever since the House revenue share legislation passed and was mandated down, it weakened the NCAA's ability to govern and have rules, because now you have 50 different states that are dictating the rules of the NCAA or the teams competing, and you're affecting the compensation and of generational wealth to a kid.
Well, they were getting weak long before that, too. I mean, the portal and the NIL severely weakened them because they lost every lawsuit they ever had. I mean, they've lost more lawsuits than that burger guy against Perry Mason. And this is what happens. The NCAA can't do anything.
Hamilton Burger.
Because they lose every lawsuit. I blame the lawyers for all of this. Kill all the lawyers. And my brother's a lawyer, but he's retired.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I think it's time for the NCAA to say bye-bye, or at least the SEC and the Big Ten to say bye-bye.
Well, it seems like there
then
is.
Do what?
Go form their own super league.
And who's going to run that league? Greg Sankey?
Nick Saban. Whoever.
Yeah. That's what people forget. Let's form our own league. Well, who's going to run it?
Well, trust me, I think they've got plans.
With two commissioners that can't agree on a lot of stuff.
But it would be one commissioner, because it would be a super league.
And so Sankey's going to just retire and say, I don't want to be a part of this anymore?
I'm not dictating or predicting what the personnel look like.
The problem is you got way too many people trying to run college athletics, and they can't decide on a schedule. I mean, just look at the NFL. Verge, I probably shouldn't say this, but Verge Osberry has spoken in the past about how the NFL, and it's a different comparison, but the NFL is so unified. Mm-hmm. He told us, Todd, he says, from Tuesday through Saturday, the NFL is one. One entity. On Sunday and Monday, they fight each other, but back on Tuesday, they're all together.
And that's exactly the point.
And the NFC South doesn't have its own conference, and the NFC North doesn't have its own conference with a commissioner. There's one guy, and he runs it all. And, you know, that's just the way it is, and it's organized. They know how to make decisions. They know how to make schedules. They know how to market. And it's hard for colleges to do that because there's so many teams. I understand that, but they're just so unorganized, and they all want to fight each other. You know, Sankey just wants to fight all the other commissioners, whether he's wrong or right. And I think he's being out-commissionered by Tony Petitti at the Big Ten, and has been for years.
Well, that's why I'm looking forward to hearing from Matt Hayes from the USA Today a little bit later on. We also have Coach Beth Tarina. We'll talk about things that are actually happening on the field or diamond. So stay tuned. A lot more to get to here on Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Some call it overplanning. At Boudreaux Electrical Services, we call it foresight. Be prepared for the next power outage with a Generac home standby generator. After sensing a power outage, a Generac home standby generator automatically restores your home power. Generac, it's not just a generator, it's a power move. Trust Boudreaux's Electrical Services for expert installations, proactive maintenance for home and business. Boudreaux'sElectricalServices.com for more information.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. LSU baseball in action tonight. Might be the last time we say that sentence until next February, as the Tiger season could come to an end tonight as they take on Oklahoma. So far today at the SEC tournament, how about Missouri? They're pulling off the bit of an upset, beating Ole Miss. And then it was a win for Vandy over Kentucky.
So the two worst seeded teams won.
No, Vandy was seeded higher than Kentucky.
Oh. But Kentucky led up until like the seventh inning.
Vanderbilt has a better seed than Kentucky?
Vandy went 14-16 in the SEC.
Wow, okay.
Kentucky went 13-17.
So, I was just going to say, what you see a lot in that tournament is like the teams that are doing pretty well and think they have a bid, they kind of want to get out of there. They just kind of want to have a practice, pitch a little bit, and get out of there. So you might see some lesser teams win, and that's why LSU is going to win five games over the next six days.
You know, it was interesting in that Kentucky game. Kentucky really had them throttled through, like I said, like six or seven innings, and then I guess Vanderbilt erupted for like five runs in one inning,
and they were fighting about how I think the Vanderbilt pitcher kind of tries to quick pitch him sometimes, and the Kentucky batters do all kind of like little cheers and stuff. It's like junior high in Hoover.
Well, this could, regardless of whether it happens tonight or tomorrow, this looks like this is the end of what has been a historically bad season. When we come together again next week, guys, we'll be looking ahead to the future. But any final thoughts that you want to provide on how bad this season has been?
Well, you know, I mean, it's been horrible. I think that there's been some good, you know, obviously Stephen Milam's been a bright spot. I think he's probably finishing off a career that'll be remembered as one of the best in LSU baseball history.
Great shortstop.
I think the biggest things that stand out to me when I think back on this season are just how could every pitcher on your pitching staff suck, and how could
five wins is the team leader. Wins.
Yeah. I mean, how could they all perform badly compared
to games
to what was expected of them? And then how could you fail flatly in the transfer portal at the same time that your pitching staff just flops?
Yeah.
And to me, that's just it. And then the injuries, but the injuries are secondary.
The injuries happened after they were already bad, too.
Right.
But I looked up a stat last night because Jay Johnson had an unbelievable quote over the weekend where he said, you know, I used to always believe that if you score seven runs, 80% of the time you're going to win. And he said, we screwed that statistic up. And sure enough, they've had 11 games this year where they scored seven or more runs and lost.
Wow.
And nine of those are in the SEC. So they actually started hitting later on in
yes,
the season.
They did.
They hit well enough to be a decent team, but the pitching never got better.
Well, but because of that, because they are able to hit the ball right now, they literally could make a run. And they could.
I'm not saying they will. Pitchers.
I'm not saying they will, but they could make a run.
I really feel that this. I know there was a lot of talk about the transfer portal flops or Jay didn't have enough money. All this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that Jay didn't have enough money is untrue.
I agree with that. I agree, and I think it started becoming too much of a lazy excuse, to be honest with you,
sure.
by some people in the media and even some fans. Well, they're losing because he doesn't have enough money.
Yeah, that's untrue.
But I really feel the hit on your point, Jay, or to Todd, is that the pitching was just awful this season.
Right.
There's not one guy that you can look on that stat sheet and say, you know what, that guy had a pretty good season.
And it has nothing to do with the portal.
And a lot of it is just development. The pitchers struck out when it came to getting Cason Evans, William Schmidt, Cooper Williams.
Maverick Rizzi,
all these guys to the next level.
And it has nothing to do with the portal.
Exactly.
Which was another lazy excuse. Oh, well, they won the championship, so then you're bad the next year. No, the players that they were expecting to be good – based on how good they were last year, were not good this year. Cason Evans, before he got hurt, William Schmidt, Maverick Rizzi, Gavin Gidry.
And you don't have anybody on that staff right now that you can look at and say, we can depend on them next year.
Right. Yeah. And no freshman really came up as a pitcher. Usually there's at least one or two that kind of rise to the top. You had a little bit with Santiago Garcia and a little bit with Marcos Paz, but not really that much.
All right, let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Jeff Palermo back inside the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. We go to our first guest of the night, and that is LSU softball coach Beth Tarina. The Tigers will be heading up to Tuscaloosa for Memorial Day weekend. I couldn't think of a better place to be for Memorial Day weekend, but especially if you're an LSU softball fan, you're pretty ecstatic of how this team has been playing as of late, and Coach Tarina joins us now. Coach, thanks a lot for spending some time with us. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great talking with you. What was your favorite part of the weekend? Some clean softball this weekend and winning the Baton Rouge Regional. Really just three solid victories.
It really was. There were so many cool things. It'd be tough to pick just one. I did head back out to third base for a minute, and we scored four runs while I was over there. So, you know, I think I'm pretty lucky out there. But, no, it was a great weekend. I mean, the offense was incredible, just scoring runs off a really tough Virginia Tech pitching staff. And then three complete games from three different starters. I don't know if I've ever heard of something like that in the postseason. It was a really, really incredible weekend.
So, Coach, heading into Alabama, obviously they're the number one seed. You guys are very familiar with Alabama because they're in the SEC and you play against them all the time. Is it a jump up in competition this weekend, or is it just a continuation of the momentum you guys have established?
Well, they got the number one seed for a reason, right? I mean, they've had a great year. I mean, they have a really complete team this year. Their offense has been outstanding, and then they have the SEC pitcher of the year on the mound. So I mean, they do a lot of things right, but Again, it's a brand of softball that we understand, right? It's in the same league. We understand how people prepare. We understand how they compete. So I don't think our kids will be, or our team will be out of sorts at all. I think it's someplace where they can feel comfortable and, you know, they just have to go out and play their best game, but it's something they're capable of doing.
Beth, your schedule early in the season was difficult. You played at number one Tennessee and some other ranked teams. You were 7-4 at one point and then finished really strong. Did you like reap the benefits as the season went on from those highly ranked teams and opponents?
Yeah, without question. I mean, that's kind of the tale, I think, of this group is the adversity that they went through has made them really tough. And I think they're peaking at the right time, but they also can take a punch, you know, and it when you're playing against a team as talented as the ones that are still left playing this weekend, really anywhere in the country, you got to be willing to take a punch, right? It's not going to go perfectly. You're going to have to fight back when something doesn't go your way. And I think the early part of this season, the adversity they went through has made them battle tested. So they're able to do that.
This team, compared to the last couple of years of your team, seems to have more just depth and breadth. Would you say that's true? And obviously, if it is true, you built it that way intentionally.
Yeah, I do think we got a few things right with this group. I think, you know, when Bryce came and he worked with Zach, who does our data and information, they kind of have established what types of players are successful in Tiger Park. We looked for a little bit different type of athlete in the portal. What we've recruited, I mean, we're sitting on the number one recruiting class in the country coming next year, too, which is made up of a lot of these players that we feel are going to have a lot of success in Tiger Park. So the roster was built a little differently with a lot of intention. And, you know, I think it has paid off here at the end. I think we're seeing great offensive numbers. I mean, took them a minute to get going, but take out the first couple of weeks, and this is as good as an offense as we've ever had here. And then the pitching staff is doing exactly what, you know, we needed them to do. A last-minute addition of Peyton Monticelli has just proved to be a huge lift for this team, too. So I think, you know, the roster built with a ton of intention has done what we wanted it to do.
Without giving away any trade secrets, what would be the keys to coming out of Alabama victorious and headed to the to Oklahoma City again?
Well, I mean, we'll have to make all the routine things routine, right? We'll have to play out the solid brand of defense we've been playing. I think not going to be able to give their offense extra outs. I do like the fact that they have five left-handers in the lineup, and, you know, we have some pitchers that are successful against left-handers. So, I mean, I do like that for us. But the real test, I think, is just to crack the code of their pitching staff, especially Jocelyn Brisky, the pitcher of the year in the league. I mean, we just have to kind of crack the code and get on to her, make her feel our presence, and, you know, put some pressure on her. And I think that, you know, that's going to be how it really goes this weekend.
Hey, Beth, I wanted to ask you a history question a little bit. When you were at Florida International and Patrick Murphy got named the LSU coach, had LSU already talked to you, or did they come to you after Murphy left following 3 days? And just how did that all go down?
Yeah, I don't know if they made any other calls besides Patrick Murphy when it first happened. I think it
right.
was like a one and done, but I don't know if that's true, but I think it is. And then when he decided not to take the job, I made sure to take him out to dinner in the summer and thank him for the opportunity, because it's been life-changing for me and my family, that's for sure.
Wow, that's awesome. Awesome story. And this is the first SEC team you're playing in a Super, correct?
I think it is.
Right.
It's crazy to believe. I think we've been in 8 or 9 Super Regionals here in my time. And I do think this is the first SEC team, which is crazy to think with the strength of this league. And I mean, there's 9 SEC teams left playing this weekend. It's incredible to think about. So it is strange that this is our first one, but it is.
And you did not play Alabama this year. You beat them 2 out of 3 last year. How does that place rank as far as crowd noise and difficult place to play? What's it like going into that park?
Unfortunately, it's the toughest one.
Okay.
You know, I think that they do the best job. I mean, they have the best crowds. We haven't played at Oklahoma in their new stadium, so that may be comparable, but it's the toughest one. They have the largest crowds in the country, some of the loudest fans. So You know, but we understand the atmosphere. We play here at Tiger Park, and it gets loud, and, you know, people get going, and they may have more of them over there, but they don't have them the same way we do here at Tiger Park. Our fans are a little bit different, you know, so we can hang with anybody in that respect.
A little bit different, talking like Lane Kiffin, Ben.
Coach,
speaking of Lane Kiffin, he was out here playing ball on the field today, playing a little slow pitch game out here on the field today. So
all right.
Interaction with him.
That's awesome. Can he swing the bat?
He wasn't too bad. Actually, I was surprised.
That's great.
Well, you know, it must be all that yoga that must keep him flexible and able to move and twitch quickly. When you talked about constructing this team for Tiger Park this year very intentionally, how does this park in Alabama compare to Tiger Park? I mean, is the team compatible to that park?
I think so. I mean, I think as far as that goes, this is a tougher park to play in, especially for an offense. Our park just plays big. You know, our winds blow certain directions. So I think probably for an offense, it lends itself a little more to their park. And again, like, our pitching staff was created to have a lot of different looks. So I think we fit in about anywhere. We got an up baller, a down baller, a left-hander, and a changeup. You know, we've kind of got all the looks. So I think our pitching staff can fit in really anywhere in the country.
Coach Tarina, good luck. Congratulations on getting back to the Super Regionals. We can't wait to see you guys play this weekend. And it's always great when LSU beats Alabama, so we're all rooting for you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
That is LSU softball coach Beth Tarina. We'll take another break. When we come back, Matt Hayes from the USA Today Network will join us here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Get growing and reading. It's May, the perfect time to fall in love with books. The East Baton Rouge Parish Library invites you to plant a seed and read from June 1st through August 18th. Visit your nearby library for exciting events, fun reading incentives, and family-friendly programs designed to inspire readers of all ages. To learn more about all the fun reading can bring, visit ebrpl.com.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me. Home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo, as we are inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Joining us now, senior national college football writer for USA Today, and also he hosts his own radio show in Jacksonville on 1010 XL. It is Matt Hayes. Matt, thanks a lot for spending some time with us tonight. How you doing? Hold on a second. I got to hit a button. Go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
Doing great. Fellas, how are you?
Hey, we're doing well. We're doing well. How significant are these SEC spring meetings coming up next week?
As big as they've ever been, I think. I think you can make a argument that they are the biggest that they've ever had there in Destin. There's a lot going on, man. A lot going on. Obviously, within the structure of the SEC, within the structure of the NCAA, the playoff, the enforcement, you know, how are they going to enforce rules? What rules are they going to have? Will the CSC have any kind of factor at all in private NIL deals, which are right now running the sport, which we all knew. All of us knew this, yet apparently they couldn't figure it out when they did it. there's a lot going on, man, a lot going on. And the 16 presidents and chancellors of that league have the ability to either take a stand and say, look, you know, I wrote this earlier. We are the 300 Persians, and we are the 300. And you're the Persian Empire coming at us, and we're not moving. and I think they've got a chance to just say, no, we're not going to 24 teams. Okay, we're either staying at 12 or we're going to 16. That's it. End of story. And then it's what do the other conferences want? Do they forge ahead without them? And if they do, that would be a gigantic mistake, because notwithstanding the three straight national titles by the Big Ten, that's impressive, right? There's no doubt about that. But if you get down to brass tacks and what it's all about, the television ratings between the SEC and everyone else, it is literally like a Grand Canyon-sized chasm between them. Now, the Big Ten has the ability to make that up, I think, with becoming a better conference, and the fact that they've added Washington and Oregon and USC and UCLA. So if you get those major markets, like to a point where those teams are starting to play better, then you got a chance. But right now, I mean, right now you get Ole Miss in Kentucky or Mississippi State in Kentucky, and that's a 3, maybe 4 million people watching that game.
That's amazing,
you get,
like, Matt.
You get Illinois against Rutgers, and it's 1.2.
Yeah, and the Big Ten schools are in much bigger, larger population centers than these little towns in the SEC. But obviously, it's throughout the whole region that's watching it. But that is an amazing stat. Now, Matt, I've been to a lot of those SEC media spring meetings, and the talk going in is like, this is the biggest one ever, like you said. But sometimes, you know, the votes aren't taken or they really don't decide anything. They talk about it a lot. But, I mean, and there is going to be huge conversations. But do you think anything's going to be, you know, voted on or done that's really significant? Or is it just going to kind of set up later things?
You know, I think it's going to be more the latter than the former. But you know, like you know, you've been through these things a lot, Glenn, and the reality is this conference has always been a conference that when they agree on something, it's unanimous. It's 12-0 or it's 14-0 or it's now 16-0. And I don't think you're going to see them say, okay, we agreed on staking at 16 and it was a 10-6 vote. It's going to be a 16-0 vote, or we agreed to do whatever. It's going to be that, because they have always, you know, whether it's right or wrong or indifferent, they've always prided themselves on, look, we're doing everything together. We share all the money. It's equally. We do everything equally. And you've never heard that dissension within the troops. And now I think you're starting to see a little dissension within the troops. Like, you see Josh Heupel's talking about he wouldn't mind a 24-team playoff. Even Kirby said he wouldn't mind it. We'll see what happens when they get there. Because Steve Sarkisian, his preference is, he said, hell, I'd go back to 4. If it were up to me, I'd go back to 4. You know, the other conferences can have their mini playoffs to get your team to the Final Four. But let's just stay at 4.
Wow.
You know, he makes a very good argument about it too. So there's a lot of possibilities on the table. I guess the overarching question is, do they dig in and say, no, it's not happening? Because I think if they do, those other conferences will back down. I really believe that. Because you can't go from January backing the SEC and it's everybody against the Big Ten to 4 months later, all of a sudden now we're all against the Big Ten. Now we're all with the Big Ten, and it's against the SEC. I to me, it's really bizarre, fellas, because I don't see how these other conferences can't see what's going on. It's the same thing the Big Ten did with the Pac-12 and the ACC. When Texas and Oklahoma went to the SEC, the Big Ten panicked, and they tried to get Notre Dame and USC, and Notre Dame said no, and USC obviously came. So since it was USC, they took the other LA team, right? And then the whole idea was, before that, was, look, we've got to stop the SEC. They're going to take control of college sports. Remember, this is before they added USC. And they got the alliance. Remember that, the alliance between the ACC and the Pac-12. Less than a year later, they stab the Pac-12 in the back, take the two LA schools, the most important television properties of that conference, and left them dead. Literally left them dead. And then they died like a year and a half later, that conference. So they stabbed their partner in the back. What makes them think that now the Big Ten, 4 years later, isn't going to do exactly the same thing? If they all agree and somehow they force the SEC into a 24-team deal, what makes them think that the Big Ten, which went to an at-large, all-at-large 24-team philosophy instead of the SEC and the Big Ten getting 4 or 5 automatic bids, what makes them think that once everybody's on board and it's 24, that all of a sudden the Big Ten says, yeah, I think we're going to go back to that automatic bid thing? Like, to me, look, they've showed you who they are. Why believe them now?
How much longer do you think we'll see the SEC championship game, Matt?
I mean, until it can be proven that they can earn more money in any other situation than they earn now, I think it'll be on for as long as it has to be on. That game is not only a moneymaker.
$100 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, in the future, it could be even more. In the future, that could be a standalone game. You could literally sell that to, like, you could have your whole deal with ESPN, and you could one-off that thing with Amazon, and they, God only knows what they'd pay you for that, right? So you could do that, and as well as, it's a game, I think, and this is as big, I really do, is it's a fabric of what that league is. That league began booming because of the conference championship game.
Yeah.
It's not going to be just like a flipping, okay, we'll get rid of it. It's just not going to be like that.
Yeah, but you had, like you said earlier, you know, you got these splits, like Greg Byrne was saying, they should get rid of it, but it's not that easy. I mean, how long is the contract with ESPN for that game?
Well, it's through the end of the deal. So it's going to be, what, 2033? Is that right?
Right. And it makes so much money. I mean, I can't see them getting rid of it either. It, you know, maybe if they went to 24, you could recoup that money, but I don't know. I mean,
I don't know how you do it because we've all seen the breakdowns of what those games would have looked like the last 2 years. Who in their right mind, do you really think you're going to sell to Amazon and Netflix and forget about your regular partners? You're going to sell Syracuse. What was the one game? Syracuse versus what was it?
James
Georgia
Madison?
Tech, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was Navy against Alabama. Like, do you really think you're going to sell that game as a marquee game? Come on, man.
Matt,
it's not going to work like that. And that's another thing too. See, this is another thing that I think never gets talked about. And Sark was the guy who talked about it when I talked to him. And all anybody saw was the dopey, you know, Ole Miss basket weaving. Nobody saw what the point he really made was no one knows what goes on in that room, the college football selection committee room. They don't know how it happens. So are you going to tell me once it gets to 24 that you're not all of a sudden going to see 18, 17 or 18 Big Ten and SEC teams in that thing? Of course you are. Of course you are. And I don't think those other conferences think that. I think they think, oh, it's all at large. It'll be great. We'll all have teams in there. And they're all going to end up getting hosed by it.
Matt, we got to go. We could talk for hours with you. Very, very insightful stuff. We really appreciate it. We'll have to get you back on again. Enjoy the time over in Destin, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, fellas.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks a lot.
All right. That is Matt Hayes with the USA Today Network. We're late for a break, so let's go ahead and take it here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Yeah, tremendous stuff there with Matt Hayes from USA Today.
He was rolling, man.
He was rolling. It's just good stuff. You know, after listening to him, I'm convinced more than ever that we will not see a 2014 playoff. And one of the points that I heard,
ESPN doesn't really want a 2014 playoff.
No, they don't want a 2014 playoff. And I think what he said about don't trust the Big Ten, don't get in bed with the Big Ten because they'll stab you in the back like they did Pac-12. And he's right. He's right. How do you trust them? Just because they've won these three national championships in football, they think they can dictate now how college football is run?
They still pale in comparison to what the SEC has won.
Seven in a row at one point.
Yeah, and it's not – I mean, the SEC will be back.
And one of the points that I've heard Matt make is that if you open it up to a 2014 playoff, you have this – how many guys are on this – guys and gals on the selection committee? 10, 12, whatever it is. How are they going to watch all of these teams to determine the seeding, determine who should get in? And I understand they have to do it for college basketball, and there's a lot of automatic qualifiers, and I think it's a little bit easier. And the games are spread out.
I think Matt's point was right on, that there is no intention of doing that. It's just to pack it with more Big Ten and SEC teams if they were to do that. But I think the big point, and he didn't necessarily address this, or at least I didn't hear him address it, is that Sankey basically shot it down, said that's not happening.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
All right, let's take a break, top of the hour break. And when we come back, looking forward to hearing from Lon Phillip Sullivan from LSU Odyssey. So stay tuned for that here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Our time is now with LSU basketball.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
One way or another, we're going to make history.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
I came here to win. We're going to win immediately.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions, Super Chevy Dealers, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And welcome to hour number two of Tiger Rag Radio. Glad you could be a part of the show here tonight. Jeff Palermo along with Tiger Rag Executive Editor, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. We're going to have Lon Philip Sullivan from the LSU Odyssey on here in a second, guys. Talk a little bit of LSU football. Hey, Todd, Glenn, I need you guys to talk here.
I got to get Lon on. Well, let's talk about Lane Kiffin and Brian Kelly and the contrast in the two before we get Lon's opinion on that.
Why do you want to talk about Brian Kelly?
Because I think that where LSU football is right now is not just about football. Even though we're talking football, I think it's about the types of coaches and the speed of the coaches and the way they operate. And the contrast between the two I think is relevant. It's like LSU went from this traditional winningest coach in college football, active coach in college football, who was very process-oriented, very templated in the way he built or thought he was building a program. And then LSU just said, hey, you know what, this isn't working. And now they've got Lane Kiffin, who's this innovative mind that, you know, takes advantage of the portal, takes advantage of NIL, takes advantage of revenue share, takes advantage of building a roster, developing a team, quick offense. It's just totally different. And I think that's a conscious decision that LSU made, whether it was Verge predominantly making that decision, which I believe it was. But I think it shows the state of the mind, if you will, of LSU as an institution.
Well, he was the best coach out there, and Verge knew that immediately. I don't think they looked at anybody else. If Lane had fallen through, they were probably going to hire Eli Drinkwitz, which would have been probably a big drop. But Verge told us he was very impressed with Eli. That might have happened. But, yeah, I think, I think Lane is a terrific hire. I think it might take him a little longer than people think. Like, I don't think he's going to be great in September. I think he might be really good in November and December. But it's going to be fun to watch. And you know, the Ole Miss is better than LSU right now. I mean, I think LSU is eventually going to be better than them. If LSU played Ole Miss later in the season, they'd probably beat them. But Ole Miss is going to be probably the best team they play next season. So LSU could lose that game and be better than Ole Miss by the end of the season. And it's such an early game that it's not going to matter, but it's going to be such a big game. But either team loses, they could still make the playoffs. But are we joined by Lon yet?
We're good. Go ahead. Lon Philip Sullivan from LSU Odyssey now joins us here on Tiger Rag Radio. Lon, thanks a lot for spending some time with us tonight. How you doing?
Doing good. How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for joining us, Lon. We were just talking about the contrast in coaching styles and philosophies between Brian Kelly, old regime, Lane Kiffin, of course, new regime, and just the contrast between the two, just totally. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, you couldn't go from, I think, two more different, wildly contrasting coaches, coaching styles, coaching personalities, and Kiffin, for all of the stuff maybe his detractors and haters want to say about him, the guy was a part of, a key part of recruiting and developing and play calling, one of the greatest college football dynasties we've ever seen at USC, as a very young assistant. This guy has championship pedigree, even though it is as an assistant coach. And so more achievements than Brian Kelly at the highest level, you know, did it at Alabama as well, probably Alabama's best offenses under Kiffin as well. So that's even just before he's a head coach. But then you see what he was able to do at Ole Miss for a sustained amount of time. Really wish he had had a chance to coach in the playoff, because then a lot of these debates would have been solved, I think, and a lot of these, you know, how he would be able to handle a team going into the playoff, and also a pre-LSU team. Just, you know, so people, you know, he could only win with LSU. Maybe that could be, that'll be a future narrative because of that, not being able to coach Ole Miss in the playoff. But two very wildly contrasting coaches going from Kelly to Kiffin. I don't think you can have two more different coaching moves from Kelly to Kiffin.
You know, and I think one of the major accomplishments that Lane did at Ole Miss, Lon, was, you know, and I don't think people realize this, because LSU and Florida, because they had such a great recruiting base before NIL and the portal and their stadium and their success and tradition, they were slow to get into the portal. You know, LSU really didn't get into the portal until after the 24 season. But Lane and Ole Miss, man, they had it together right off. And I remember Matt Moscona talking about that back in like 21 and 22. They were way ahead of LSU at that time. And part of that was probably Ole Miss, but I think part of it was Lane. And Chris Smith, the Vanity Fair writer, that's one of the things he said. He said there's no coach in the country right now that's better equipped for the way college football is than Lane with the portal and the NIL. So, you know, it's a slam dunk hire, and you got to remember he signed really a 2-year portal class. In fact, I was wondering if he signed any guys to 2-year deals instead of one. I understand they all signed to one, but LSU is going to be really good for at least the next two years with this group of players, and then we'll see what else he brings in.
That's the thing people don't realize about a lot of the portal targets that LSU went after and then eventually signed, brought into LSU for this class. A lot of these guys have multiple years of eligibility, so you'll be able to see, year to year, this class grow, hopefully with retention. And it seemed like Kiffin was able to retain players pretty well at Ole Miss.
He did. That's the other thing. He sure did. Kind of like the Indiana coach.
Absolutely, Cignetti.
So, Lon, do you believe that, you know, there's a sentiment that Lane has to win and win right now? Do you believe that?
There's definitely that sentiment. I personally don't believe that. I think when you're going to see in the grand scheme of things, a lot of the rosters around college football cost $40 million, if not more. But this is a brand new thing for LSU, a new frontier by, you know, double. I mean, $18 million is what we spent on the roster in 2025, and that was a ton. It felt like LSU had spent more than we had the entire portal combined in one single spree. And it didn't quite work out. Too many big-time guys on the defensive side, maybe not enough help on the offensive side, or maybe going after the wrong guys. Kiffin, given $40 million, you get the number one quarterback, Sam Leavitt. You get the number one offensive lineman, Jordan Seaton. You get the number one edge rusher in Prince Will, who Kiffin has already coached for a full season at Ole Miss. You have all of these pieces, but you got to see this team gel like any other team. Just because you have a number one this, a number one that, a top five this, and even our backup is a top 10 quarterback as well, a top 10 ranked portal quarterback. So Kiffin has done an incredible job of locking and loading this roster, but really, it is like we're like any other team. You have to see this team gel. You have to see this team come together. And really, for me, it's all about two guys who are injured right now, who are out. I mean, they're technically close to full health, but
Sam Leavitt and Tre'Davious Green, you're talking about?
Well, actually, Sam Leavitt and Whit Weeks.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. You're right.
No, one on offense and one defensively. Guys that you haven't really seen the offense or the defense play around, and really they're the central focus of both sides of the ball on each side of those balls, each side of the ball there. So it is kind of an unknown quantity of what LSU will be in year one under Kiffin. But Sam Levitt, exciting dual-threat quarterback. If you can get this up-tempo offensive setup going with Sam Levitt, he's fully healthy. You don't see much of a speed taken away from his rushing abilities, then I think LSU will have a strong chance. I mean, you marry a Kiffin offense, Weiss play calling, a dual threat quarterback who had just two fewer missed tackles forced than Jaden Daniels did in his Heisman winning season with 38, Sam Levitt, really able to, to make guys miss. Not just, be kind of elusive, but also make guys miss in the open field and show some real speed. If we're able to see that married with a Blake Baker defense, where you've got pieces all over the field, that as long as this team is healthy, both of those are such exciting potential, Glenn. And when you see both of these, a Blake Baker defense, a Lane Kiffin offense, such unbelievable potential for success there. If you stay healthy and you see every at least most buttons pushed correctly.
Well, the thing that concerns me, and I share your excitement and your enthusiasm, those pieces are obviously there. And Kiffin's an offensive genius and play caller. And I think, with Weiss and everything, that's going to work exactly the way, conceptually you've outlined it. But the big thing that sticks in my mind is, you did bring in Jordan Seaton, but your offensive line was the worst offensive line in the history of mankind last year. And your wide
receiver.
That Curly
Holman offensive line was pretty bad in 89, buddy.
I bet you if you compared the two.
I don't know, man.
All right, whatever. They were both horrible, okay? But the point is can you raise the level of that offensive line enough to get it to a wide receiver room, which I know you've been chronicling this past week, which is built to succeed? And maybe you can go into that a little bit.
Oh, fantastic question. This offensive line, I think the way Lane Kiffin's play calling and the way Lane Kiffin's system is set up, I think it can also paper over the cracks of a weaker offensive line. And you can really gash and really wear down a defensive front, even if your offensive line isn't really that good, and maybe you have some holes, some mismatch opportunities for a defensive front to take advantage of, up-tempo, no-huddle, hurry-up, heavy metal type of offensive attack that, we're seeing our offensive line kind of get weathered through storm and weathered through the storms through spring to kind of get adjusted to. It's not just play calling, it's not just learning the playbook and your teammates, but also just the conditioning of being able to do this. Jordan Seaton, I was very comfortable with what I saw out there. I saw a lot of impressive battles between him and Prince Will on the wing. Really love what I see from Jordan Seaton. Absolute knockout there, no problem. But left guard, is that going to be Bo Bordelon? Is it going to be Devin Harper? Is it going to be William Satterwhite? There's a few candidates for that role, but none of them have much experience. And then right tackle, Weston Davis. You've seen him have to get a lot of help from usually tight end Malachi Thomas being over there, a lot of 12 and 13 personnel, just to supplement Weston Davis over there, and a lot of combo blocking with the guards as well. I love what I've seen from right guard Alu Ba out of Maryland, who transferred over here. I really was worried about that spot. He alleviated all of my worries. I think he's going to be solid for LSU. Center Braylon Moore, fantastic, but once again, you got to make sure all these guys stay healthy. Braylon Moore, he had some injury troubles last year. I think this offense has every potential to be fantastic. But Eric Walford was one of the most maligned offensive line coaches in the SEC. His own fans, Kentucky fans, messaged me in mass and said, "Thank you for taking him from us."
Well, he was really good at Alabama, though, and I don't care how maligned he was at Kentucky, He was better than Brad Davis. I'll give you that.
Let's go ahead and take a break. Lon, if you can hang on through this commercial, we'd love to bring you on for another segment.
Of course, of course. Thank you, guys.
All right, Lon Phillips Sullivan of LSU Odyssey. Let's take a break. We'll get into that, talk more about the wide receivers. Variety of them. A lot of big-time players. They can make some plays. We'll get Lon's perspective on that and much more when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy Trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy Trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, along with Glenn Gilbo, Todd Horn. We're talking with Lon Phillip Sullivan. Earlier today, we talked with Beth Tarina. We heard from Matt Hayes from USA Today. If you missed any of that, you can check out our podcast anywhere you get your podcast, or you can also watch the show on YouTube. It'll be uploaded there about 30 minutes or so after the show. Look back at previous shows as well. As I mentioned, we're talking with Lon Phillip Sullivan from LSU Odyssey. And Lon, wide receivers, there's a bunch of them. Which four or five guys that you think will really stand out this season?
Tool that entire receiving core top to bottom there, guys. I mean, just top to bottom. And really what's exciting to me is the first guy that we actually got in the entire transfer portal, Jackson Harris out of Hawaii. He's the leader in production coming into the receiving room, but he just shows me such all around just pure receiving talent. Whether you need a big play on third down, he's there for you. A big play downfield, he's there for you. A big play over the middle. He's really shown out in spring practices against tight coverage, against guys like DJ Pickett and PJ Woodland, which I was looking for. Like, okay, you were solid at Hawaii, just under 1,000 yards. How good are you going to be against SEC coverage? He's really, I mean, against some lengthy, some experienced guys like Pickett, like Woodland, he's really stood on his own two feet and really showed out in spring. But you know, there's some other guys that really have caught my eye. Jace Brown and Trey Wilson. I think this team is going to need some burning speed. Winnie Watkins as well. These guys I want to see getting the football over the middle constantly throughout the game. You got to be throwing the football over the middle for these guys in space, in stride, and let them, you know, exercise their absolute virtuosic yards after catch abilities. Trey Wilson, just to illustrate, in his freshman year when he was at his best before injuries kind of robbed him the last few seasons, 480 yards after catch from 544 total yards. Mm. A lot of short yardage stuff, but he's just making people miss, making a lot of moves after the catch, and really very exciting weapons with him. Jace Brown, former Kansas State guy. Trey Brown out of Old Dominion as well, averaged 20.1 yards per catch in the Sun Belt Conference, you know, torched Old Dominion's opponents, you know, at that level. But now coming into spring practices, I really wasn't, I was expecting to be blown away by him. I was kind of expecting him to take the bull by the horns, and he really was quite lukewarm in spring. I'm really hoping for him to break out coming up here in fall camp, but you know, if not, there's other guys. Roman Mothershed, as I call him, the Mothership. He is absolutely massive, 6'5", 208. You know, that's the thing about this group. There is a complete length and strength and power dynamic upgrade here with this receiving core. Way, you know, updated and upgraded in that respect for this receiving room. You've got, I think the shortest guy, those guys are usually the speedy burner guys like Trey Wilson or Jace Brown. And it doesn't really matter if they're really short. But other than those guys, you just have length everywhere you look. Corey Barber, a young freshman, he's really looking like he's going to be a star. Jabari Mack, he made that generational ESPN one-handed catch. But then he hasn't really done anything after that. He had a lot of drops. He had a lot of disappointing performances in spring, a lot of lackadaisical play. So, like, freshman superstar, you know, maybe not quite just yet, but he's shown a lot of incredible explosive promise, Jabari Mack, and definitely one to keep your eyes on still, even though I think sometimes in spring he was actually quite disappointing, even though he made that incredible face-melting catch. But Winnie Watkins, he had this scrimmage where he went for 164 yards, 10 catches, and it really said, like, that's a dude who Kiffin's going to want to feed. But as we all know, it's all about Trey Des Green. Feed him. And really, that's where the bulk of the passing game should be going to.
Well, it should be interesting to see how it all sorts itself out. We'll have to get you on a little bit later on in the offseason, talk some more as we preview what will be a very interesting 2026 LSU football season. Thanks for your time, Lon.
Oh, you guys are the best. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Tiger Rag. Have a good night.
All right. Tigers. Lon Philip Sullivan from LSU Odyssey. We'll be back after this here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Let's go.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here inside the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, Jeff Palermo along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. We bring in our old friend, Andre Champagne, joins us here on the show now, of course, with 247, former Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Rag reporter. Andre, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing well, guys. It's nice to hear y'all voices again.
That's great to hear from you.
That's good to hear from y'all, too. How are things going?
Well, you haven't turned in a story in I don't know how long. What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
Good point, Todd. Good point.
All right. Let's just jump right in, man. Because you're the recruiting guru now.
Yeah, you're all over the state. Where have you not been?
That's a good question. I've given my car a break for the week. My Honda's putting in some work. We've been to Mississippi and we've been all around Louisiana so far. So.
All right. So with your boots on the ground, working the way they have, and now you're giving your car a break. I don't quite understand how you're still boots on the ground if your car's getting a break. But what's going on? I mean, I understand that LSU had a top-notch cornerback that they were going after, and now he's sort of decided to go elsewhere. Or what's happening there?
Yeah. So Josh Dobson canceled his visit with LSU that he was, supposed to take on June 12th, which was really, from the staff's point, that was going to be a pivotal weekend in his recruitment for LSU, but it looks like he's going to Michigan now. And it did come as a surprise, but it's one where Josh Dobson, his recruitment has been really, prioritized with his agent. It seems like they have a price for him. It seems like LSU may not be willing to pay that price, from the sources that I've heard from. But LSU still has some guys that they're, turning to right now, whether that's Makai Williams, a Florida State commit right now, who's a safety. He's a four-star safety out of Ruskin, Florida. But he's getting recruited by Corey Raymond as a cornerback. He's a big guy. He's 6'3". So, you know, they have options, but Dobson is definitely going to be one that they're going to wish they had, you know, a chance with. And it might not be done with, you know. Mm-hmm. Corey Raymond is a guy where, look, you saw what he did with, you know, going in-house with Dobson earlier this spring. So, I mean, you really can never give up on a guy like Corey Raymond and his stature, who's been able to get the best of the best.
Andre, how many, I know it's a long way off, but how many players do you think are going to be in Kiffin's class of 2027, you know, the early signing period plus next February?
I would say somewhere around 25 to 30. Now, that's okay. Going to be a lot more than they did, you know, have this last signing class, but that's because Kiffin really had to put it together within about 5 days or so, it seems like. So I would say about 25 to 30. You know, there's going to be a lot of late offers that are being picked up right now, so that number could rise. But when you look at, you know, the cornerback depth right now on the roster, they're going to definitely try and add a few more cornerbacks than they probably need in terms of numbers, right? So I think cornerbacks are going to be heavy. Wide receivers, you know how Kiffin is. He brought in 9 with the transfer portal, so he's not going to be scared to bring in one too many from the high school ranks.
Let me ask you this, Andre, real quick. Sorry, Todd. Okay, he signed 41 players in the portal, and a lot of that first portal class is going to be at LSU for 2 years. Do you think he's got that base in? Do you think he's going to kind of become more of a high school recruiter than he ever was at Ole Miss and kind of start leaning that way? Go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely do, Glenn, because all the guys that I've talked to, you know, have said that Kiffin has talked to them and said, hey, like, you know, especially with the 27 guys, like, you're going to be our true first recruiting class that we really signed. So we're making it an effort to say, like, these are the guys we really want. These are the guys that fit our description and our system. So it's important for those guys to kind of come into the system early, right, and learn those things as opposed to grabbing 40 new guys from the portal. Now, the portal's still going to be heavy for LSU, especially when you look at maybe who's seniors and juniors and draft eligible and all those kinds of things. But I don't expect 40, right? Like, that's a complete rebuild. Maybe we're looking at, like, 25 to 30, same thing with the high school guys. We might have, like, an even split there.
Andre, when you're talking to these players, like the Easton Royals and the high-caliber targets that people want, not just LSU, how do they characterize Kiffin as a recruiter, as a coach?
They actually, it's pretty funny. Like, they say he's just intense, right? Like, one recruit told me the other day, he just gives you that look, and you kind of know, like, he's really about this. Like, he really lives, breathes football. Like, he doesn't really care about anything outside of it. And that's the kind of feel that they've gotten too. Like, Easton Royal really loves that coaching staff down in Baton Rouge. Same thing with Albert Simeon. He really loves Coach Wolford. But Kiffin is a guy who's not going to give up in terms of recruitment. He's a guy that doesn't like to lose. We've talked about it with Levitt, right? Like, earlier this year, he hopped on a plane because he heard that Tennessee might have gained some traction after that visit. So he went to see him in Knoxville and made sure that he could close the deal. And it obviously worked. So, I mean, the guy's not going to give up, and that's going to be the same for a guy like Albert Simeon and Easton Royal, who are really two program-changing type of players in this recruiting cycle.
So specifically with Royal right now, he committed to Texas the day before Kiffin was hired at LSU, if that's correct on the timeline there. But like you said, now he's really attracted to the program. Could right. We see some movement? I know you can't predict the future, but what are you seeing in your mind?
Yeah. It feels inevitable. I mean, it really does with Royal. Now, I think he's down to 3 options, really. I know that he's kind of come down to 4 to 5 schools that he really thinks have stood out to him. But after talking with him a couple weeks ago, it seems like it's going to either be stay at Texas, a flip to LSU, or maybe even a possible flip to Florida is what I'm hearing. as of late. Florida, he really raved about that coaching staff and what Summerall's been able to do since he got to Gainesville. And as far as LSU, I mean, he said it himself. It's home. It's who he grew up watching, really. And so there's obviously an emotional tie to LSU. It's just going to come down to, I guess, you know, a few things as far as the staff goes and kind of what his fit is. You know, just especially he's watched the Ole Miss offenses in the past, and he told me he really likes how they use the wide receivers. So, you know, Kiffin and that offense jump out to him. I think a big factor that we're not really talking too much about is NIL. Like, he completely told me, hey, NIL plays a factor for me, but it's not, you know, the number one thing. So I think, you know, when a lot of people say, hey, this was just a money thing, it's not going to be the end-all, be-all for Easton Royal. It's going to be, you know, what is going to be the team that develops me, you know, the best of their ability and that I can win a national championship with at the end of the day.
Talking to Andre Champagne from 247 Sports. Andre, Ahmad Hudson, the number one tight end in the country, five-star from Ruston, he has said that he wants to play basketball, too, for Coach Will Wade. What's your feeling on, or what are you hearing, if anything, how you think Lane is going to be about that? How is he with dual sport guys?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I talked to Ahmad last week, and he told me, like, you know, that was a deal breaker for him. So I think they're going to let him kind of try it out. I will say I think Ahmad Hudson's a way better basketball player than Trey Des Green was. So I think he could make it work. Now, do I think he'll, you know, play a lot of basketball? I don't think so. But, you know, he firmly believes that he can do both. And I think they're going to give him a go at it because Will Wade, obviously, he does want him. Ahmad Hudson said that his dad has known Will Wade for a while now. And the two have kind of, you know, actually became friends over the years of his recruitment. So,
and they need an American on the team.
right. I mean,
but his name doesn't sound totally
right.
American.
He doesn't. But he is an American, and his dad's an American.
He is. But yeah, that I see what you guys did there. Wow. Yeah, maybe he'll start. Maybe he will start going after more high school recruits. We'll see. But anyway, Ahmad really expressed that he wanted to play both. Now, I could see it working out in the way that, hey, Ahmad joins the team after the football season, which could be trouble, really, because it could be kind of a trade edge situation where he joins the team during SEC play down the stretch. But I'm interested as well to see how they work out those kinks.
Andre, do you believe, getting back to football recruiting, do you believe that Kiffin's going to land in the top five with this 2027 class when it's all said and done?
I definitely give him a top 10. I think top 10 is inevitable, obviously. They have a lot of guys. Right now, obviously, it's quiet. But after OV season, I expect things to ramp up pretty quickly, especially with some of those high-talented guys, you know, like the Easton Royals and the Albert Simeons. But, I mean, they're gonna land, like I said, a lot more guys. So I expect it to be a pretty high class. I won't say top five yet. I need to see some things, have some things work out, especially since Dobson doesn't, you know, probably end up with
here,
the Tigers.
Right.
But I think top 10 for sure.
One quarterback only, or do you expect another one to be added?
Peyton Houston is their guy. And you know, obviously there's that, you know, that conversation of why didn't they go for Elijah Haven? Well, Lane Kiffin and you know, they were the first team to offer Peyton Houston SEC-wise. So he holds that dearly, and they've stuck with him. And so I think he's the quarterback of the future.
Andre, great hearing from you. Good work with 247. We appreciate it, man. We'll get you back on later.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Andre Champagne, or as we affectionately called Luke here on Tiger Rag Radio. Let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio when we come back.
Get growing and reading. It's May, the perfect time to fall in love with books.
The East Baton Rouge Parish Library invites you to plant a seed and read from June 1st through August 18th. Visit your nearby library for exciting events, fun reading incentives, and family-friendly programs designed to inspire readers of all ages. To learn more about all the fun reading can bring, visit ebrpl.com.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Jeff Palermo inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio with LSU Executive.
LSU.
Tiger Rag Executive Editor. That is Todd Horn. We are going to hear in a second here from LSU System President Wade Roos. He was at the Baton Rouge Press Club, talked about a wide variety of things. I don't know if he really broke any news. He was asked about the LSU arena, and there's really not much going on with the arena. Here's a snippet of what he had to say when asked about it.
I wouldn't characterize those as the arena taxes, but there is an economic development district that is a much broader economic development district and an athletic district. Those taxes are being collected. To be completely transparent, that was a good question for us about a month ago because we had no idea what was at. And Brandy, our CFO, started really working hard to try to figure out what's going on and where it's at. We have an account in place. We're setting up all of the structures. I had to actually sign on as the EDD president and give them my driver's license and everything else as the fiduciary of that account. So there is money in that account. Nothing has been spent yet. Where it's going to be spent kind of depends on if we end up getting an arena or not. As you know, the EDD has some earmarks in terms of structural issues that it needs to be spent on. You can imagine if you drive our campus and see some of the potholes on our campus and curve concrete that is broken, that we have a lot of places to spend them, but we're going to put a real strategy in order to try to prioritize where that needs to be done and where it needs to be spent. But we finally do have it in place. We have an account in place. This is like breaking news. This is like this week. It was all put in place. So we do have it in place. Brandy Roberts, our CFO, Dr. Roberts, is doing an amazing job. She's got her hands around it. And we're going to put a priority list together in terms of how that money is going to be spent.
And that money he's talking about is money being generated from a tax that was placed on businesses in that area through the LSU Economic Development District. Some of that funding, or at least that tax, and you know a heck of a lot more about this than I do, Todd, but the reason why this Economic Development District was formed was to help generate funds for a new arena. But in that soundbite that you heard from Wade Roos, he talked about there could be arena, there might not be arena. So it doesn't sound like the ball's really moving down the field on this.
No, and I think that it was actually a very revealing press conference, and to President Roos's credit, he was very transparent. What we did not know before that meeting at the press club was had the taxes actually been collected, and they started being collected on October 1st of 2025, and where the money was. Well, now we know that it's in an account, and that account, that money, which will amount to about $161 million projected over 30 years, is pretty significant. And even though LSU and Roos yesterday said it was not geared towards the arena, there is a lawsuit by Daryl Glasper Sr. that was filed in December of 2025, and the attorney for that case is William Most, and he's done discovery and found documentation in terms of emails and memos saying that the money, both cents, meaning both 1% tax collections of that money, were to go to the arena. And one of the biggest things that Bruce said yesterday in the press club meeting was this arena is going to cost LSU money. It's not going to be like it was originally proposed, where it wasn't going to cost us anything. A private firm was going to come in. We were just going to lease the land. Now, he didn't go into all that detail.
Yeah, he talked about how they're going to need the state to help come up with part of the funding.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was a very revealing thing. It was actually refreshing. to his, again, to his credit, for him to be open, because one of the biggest concerns about this project is not that conceptually the arena is a bad idea, or having the arena and the whole economic development district with hotels and restaurants in the area around that arena, which is not just to be a home for basketball and gymnastics, but also a home for concerts and entertainment, and an additional revenue stream in and of itself that way. But the whole point was that if you're going to do this, let us know what's going on. Where they got into trouble with this economic development district tax is no person that lives in the area was allowed to vote on that tax. And that remains the basis of the lawsuit moving forward.
But the tax is only impacting businesses.
Yeah, well, it's only taxing businesses, but that's, you know, there are people that live there. So as William Most says, the attorney, you cannot have tax without representation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's an old American issue.
Right. Let's take another break, and then we'll wrap up the show when we come back. This is Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Got to thank all our guests tonight, Beth Tarina, LSU softball coach, Matt Hayes of the USA Today, Lon Phillips Sullivan of LSU Odyssey, and Andre Champagne, formerly of Tiger Rag, now 247 Sports, with a recruiting breakdown. LSU baseball set to still play Oklahoma tonight. God bless you for, if you are planning to stay up till midnight to watch this thing, if you... It is going to be bizarre, Todd, come Monday when we're not breaking down brackets and looking at regional opponents and all that kind of stuff. For some that really love this part of the year, it's also very sad. And it's amazing how far it's not even close when it comes to them even being on the bubble.
If they did, I know we talked about it earlier in detail, but if they did make a run, would you be – just totally shocked?
I would not be surprised if they won tonight, and I partly would not be surprised if they won tomorrow, because it's LSU baseball and they find a little magic in this place.
Tomorrow, if they win tonight, tomorrow they're supposed to be going 70-75 pitches against Auburn's ace.
Yeah, right.
Which defies convention.
Yeah.
You know?
So you never know. You never know, but I'm not counting on it just because it's just been that bad. But maybe they find a little magic, get a win tonight, and then, maybe it all ends tomorrow, and then Jay Johnson and his coaching staff get to work. But the transfer portal isn't quite open just yet, but they can be out there recruiting and all that kind of stuff and get the exit meetings out of the way and evaluate everything that – and that evaluation has been ongoing, but
your opinion, biggest thing they need to do in the portal,
pitching, comes down to pitching. To me, they obviously have a good little group of position players here, but as you mentioned earlier in the show, who are you really counting on next season to be good for you? Who's your Friday night starter? I don't know if you got one.
When's the last time LSU was looking forward to another season at any point and didn't have an idea who their anchor pitchers were going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, hey, that does it for another show. Thanks again for everyone that was listening. For Glenn, Todd, I'm Jeff Palermo. Have a great night, everyone.